Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Chris Farrell. The American dream is a catchphrase that has many different meanings, but the core idea seems to be this. You leave your children better off and with greater opportunities than you had at their age. Yet for much of the African-American community, that dream has proved elusive. Minnesota has some of the nation's worst racial disparities in income, health, and educational attainment. Like the rest of the country, the striking gap is in wealth, largely reflecting low levels of home ownership. So today I'd like to explore this question. Can Black-owned financial institutions create greater opportunities for wealth creation in Minnesota's African-American community? That's the ambition of a new Minneapolis-based Black-owned credit union, the Village Trust Financial Cooperative. And we want to hear from you. What has been your experience trying to get a mortgage in, say, North Minneapolis? Do you rely on payday loans? What would it mean to have your checking, savings, and loan business at a minority-owned credit union? Call us at 651-227-6000, toll-free at 800-242-2828. Online, you can tweet at CFarrellEcon. That's at CFarrellEcon. And we have two guests with us today. With me in the studio is Malia Connolly. She's director of the Association for Black Economic Power in Minneapolis. Welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Mike Shent joins us by phone. He's vice president for research and policy analysis at the Credit Union National Association in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm glad you could join us, Mike.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So, Malia, I wanted to start with you. What's the genesis of the idea to create the Village Trust Financial Cooperative?
Sure. So the genesis of Village Trust Financial Cooperative was actually from activism. There was a group of community members who came together in the wake of the killing of Philando Castile, who wanted to discuss this concept around Blexit. Blexit is our nonprofit economic resistance organization that's based around the concept of boycotting with an invest-divest approach. This concept was...
And boycotting?
Boycotting consumerism.
Okay.
So what types of resources do we have? How can we organize ourselves to take our resources out of certain systems and invest them into others? And how do we make those decisions? Folks are really energized around this concept following the killing of Philando Castile. And at our meeting a week after he died, community members all gave, you know, their ideas around what would be the most powerful strategies.
And was this at a town hall meeting
this
or
at
a series of town hall meetings?
Right. This was at a community space on the north side of Minneapolis.
Okay.
Close to 200 community members came out. And there was small group sessions. Folks had butcher paper all over the walls. We went around and everyone got a chance to vote multiple times until we had a really substantial list of about four or five priorities. And to establish a Black-led financial institution had over twice the votes of all the other votes on the board. And so that mandate came directly from the community, and myself and the core team of Blexit started working around this concept and organizing around it. And that was in the summer of 2016.
And why a credit union?
That's a great question. When we look at economic power, we have to be really particular around the entities that we choose. When you look at the structure of banks, unfortunately, they're capitalistic in nature. Even if they're Black-owned, it ends up being a system that those who are able to take on the profits are the shareholders and the CEO. However, a credit union is more focused around circulating wealth within a community. And also, community members can be members and member owners of that financial institution. And so a financial cooperative provides more equity, and it also circulates resources as opposed to creating a for-profit and profit-focused institution.
And why cooperative in the title?
Great question. Our experience has been, especially in the Black community, that the credit union industry, because it's become so heavily regulated, has replicated a lot of community and even large bank practices. And so we're not seeing as much traction and accessibility to financial services for the Black community in the credit union industry. And also, the cooperative space is a really vibrant space for us to build a larger vision, not just a credit union, but also igniting a wide, broad, and deep Black cooperative ecosystem. And so by lifting up the word cooperative, it's a way to remind community members that a credit union is a cooperative and that there is ownership in that. It bolsters the concept of active membership, and it also puts the focus on how can Village Trust Financial Cooperative uplift and ignite a broader Black cooperative ecosystem.
So if you're wondering how to work with this cooperative, to do business with this credit union, to get a home mortgage through this credit union, give us a call. Let us know what you think. What is your experience in North Minneapolis or other parts of the state where financial institutions have a very weak presence? Call us at 651-227-6000. Toll free, that's 800-242-2828. Mike, off of what Malaya is saying, what are some of the ingredients for success that you would emphasize?
Well, I think first and foremost, Malaya hit the nail on the head. What makes these institutions special is that they are not-for-profit, and most importantly, they're member-owned and democratically controlled. That means no matter how much you have on deposit at a credit union, you have the same voice as, say, somebody that has lots of money on deposit at the credit union. So when there's voting for the board of directors at a credit union, doesn't matter if you have $5 in your account or $500 in your account. You have that voice, and that makes a difference. Unlike banks, no outside stockholders that demand a market rate of return on their investment. So profits that would go to the stockholders go right back to the members, increasing membership wealth. And that's really a big deal. In terms of recipe for success, there are a couple things that kind of stand out. In the credit union sphere, awareness is definitely an issue. A lot of folks just simply aren't sure what a credit union is. And so describing to them, getting the word out, on how these institutions can make a difference in people's lives is really important. There are a couple of myths that we encounter on an ongoing basis, and we're breaking those down, but they definitely are barriers. One, folks don't know that they can join, or they don't think they can join credit unions. They think that they have to have some sort of special relationship with an employer or something of that nature. And that was true historically, but it's not necessarily true today. We like to say that any consumer would more than likely find multiple credit unions that they'd be able to join. We have a website called thesmarterchoice.org where people can gravitate to and type in their zip code and find credit unions in their neighborhood.
And what about, I could ask Malaya this, but I'll ask you this, Mike. What about capital?
I'm not sure what you mean.
The money that's going to be lent out. Where does, how much do you need? Where does the capital come from?
The capital comes from the depositors themselves. And the institution starts, first of all, there are very few credit unions that are started annually, just a couple every year. But a small pool of investors would get together and contribute deposits that would constitute the capital of the institution. The profits that are generated over time, then a certain percentage of those profits are retained and funneled into the capital position. Regulators require a minimum level of capital equal to 7% of total assets. So generally speaking, the loans that are made are being funded by deposits in the community.
So, Malia, I have lots more questions to ask you, but before I do, I think we should go to the phones. And Benjamin in St. Paul. Benjamin?
Hi, thank you for having me on. I'm absolutely encouraged by the conversation you guys are having about a Black-owned bank, especially centralized here in Minneapolis or here in the Twin Cities. I'm a member of the One United Bank, which is a Black-owned bank on the East Coast. And the idea to have one here is wonderful. My question is, how far along is this process? And more importantly, how can I get involved and who do I talk to about any kind of updates on what I can do to further assist you guys in developing this this organization?
Okay.
Hey, Benjamin. Thanks so much for your support. That's so great. Yeah, so the process of getting a credit union is really a persuasive business plan, and that's a charter application. And we're actually wrapping that up this summer. We'll be submitting it to the National Credit Union Administration and to the Minnesota Department of Commerce. The way that you can get involved is to go to our website. That's www.abepmn.org. It's abepmn.org, and you can pledge to become a member. It's really important that we know what community members are out there that are interested in pledging, because that helps influence our business plan, and it helps us know what kind of products and services are you looking for, what kind of deposits we can expect to have at the credit union. And there's also opportunities to volunteer on the website. So if you're interested in becoming a Village Trust Ambassador, we'd love to have you.
Now, there was a Black-led credit union bank. I can't remember if it was a credit union or a bank in the Rondo neighborhood that was around for a considerable period of time, but went away with the destruction of the historic neighborhood. Did you learn anything from that experience? Have you talked to anybody that was involved in that? Or
I think you might be talking about Credifon. There's actually a Black cooperative community in the Rondo neighborhood. There are very few Credifon members that are still around today. I haven't had the opportunity or the privilege to speak with anyone, but I have done considerable research. I was a part of a fellowship with Nexus Community Partners, and they have a fellowship around the history of Black cooperatives and a portion specifically on Black cooperatives here in Minnesota, and we have a rich history. That fellowship is called the North Star Black Cooperative Fellowship, and it's run by a wonderful program manager there called Danielle M. Cully. She's also on our executive committee. And so Credifon was a vibrant cooperative community. They not only had a credit union, they also had a social club. They also had a co-op grocery and many other type of affinity groups that really ran a vibrant cooperative ecosystem, which is what we're trying to replicate.
I was just going to say, that's what you're trying to,
exactly,
to bring back in,
yes,
North Minneapolis.
That's right.
Give us a call if you have a question for Mike or Malia at 651-227-6000, toll free 800-242-2828. Are you wondering if you can get a home loan through them, a payday loan? You know, what kind of business would you like to do with the cooperative that is being created? Mike, I want to ask you where, you know, if you look at, you know, recent history, in 1985, if I have my numbers right, there were 60 Black-owned banks, and the last number I saw was 23. And of the 50 Black-owned insurance companies that operated during the 1980s, there only two remain. So, you know, what's been happening to Black-owned financial institutions, including credit unions?
Yeah, I can tell you from our perspective, there has been an increasing amount of interest in communities throughout the nation in the credit union concept, in the cooperative finance concept. Obviously, the financial crisis had a really significant effect on people. Most people recognize that the big banks played a large role in saddling consumers with inappropriate mortgages and were primarily responsible for that situation. Credit unions had no role really in the creation of the crisis. Because we're member owned, because our depositors and our borrowers own these institutions, we treat them with the dignity and respect and put them into products and services that are appropriate, not inappropriate. And so what we've seen over the course of the last 10 years or so is a real obvious migration of people into the cooperative finance model. And that is especially true in the African-American community. At the moment, we see total membership in credit unions, 17% African-American. That compares to about 13% at banks, and of course 13% of the population. So there's a bit of an overrepresentation of African Americans in the credit union movement at the moment. And I can tell you, based on data from our regulator, there are over 500 credit unions in the United States today that report more than half of their membership that is African American. So it's a pretty significant migration that we're seeing. 5 million members in those credit unions, and they control over $50 billion in total assets. Similarly, there's a roughly 450 credit unions throughout the country that have at least half of their board that is comprised of African Americans. So it really is a model that's resonating with consumers generally, and it seems to be especially attractive to African Americans and to people, I think, generally speaking, that from an income and wealth standpoint have been stressed over the last 10 years or so.
Emily, again, these are national figures that I'm talking about. But if you look back to the 1990s to now, there's been a decline in black entrepreneurship. It was probably one of the more disturbing trends that's going on when you think about economic vitality and the growth in the community. So how do you see the cooperative feeding into, you know, starting businesses, self-employment, entrepreneurship?
I'd like to back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the concept around how we got here. And specifically, talking about the credit union industry and the cooperative industry. And one important element is getting back to that concept around like a field of membership and, you know, who are the groups that are supporting a particular credit union and the history of that. Mike mentioned this concept around having depositors and having investors come in to provide that capital. And historically, that has been pretty constrained to having a type of subsidizing entity, a sponsorship entity. So when he mentioned things like, you know, people have this myth that employees, you know, you have to be an employee of a certain
right.
company to be a part of a credit union, that's based in historical fact, because credit unions would be established by actual, you know, affinity groups like churches or insurance companies or corporations. And what's happened is it's expanded to community groups and geographical areas. The difficulty in that is that doesn't come along with a sponsorship model, that doesn't come along with an entity that can subsidize the costs of lifting up a credit union. So our particular credit union is what you call a community development credit union, where we have a mission towards a specific community, and that's we're really tailoring towards affecting the Black community on the north side of Minneapolis and the Black community in the broader Twin Cities area. Our field of membership is Hennepin and Ramsey County, and that's a really, really broad membership.
Yeah.
So anyone who lives, worships, works, or goes to school in Hennepin and Ramsey County. So you can imagine the cost that it would be, you know, that we need to raise in order to sustain a credit union serving that population. The difficulty is that because of our mission, we don't come along with kind of, you know, automatic sponsorship, automatic investors. This came from a group of concerned community members. And so when we talk about the disparities, we really have to address the consolidation that's happening in the credit union industry. And what's happening, you mentioned this in your show earlier when we're talking about trust and consolidation in corporations as well. This is also happening in the credit union industry, where if a credit union isn't growing at a certain rate, if they don't have the deposits that regulators want to see, there'll be pressure for those credit unions to merge with a larger one. And so that is one example of how the credit union industry has hasn't necessarily been failed there hasn't been just abject dismissal of the Black community. However, there has been consolidation across the country, and this also speaks to the reason why there are very few new credit unions. I think we should also address the difficulty of community development credit unions and their ability to start and be sustained over time. In our situation in Minnesota, we would be the only community development credit union in the metro area, and the only other community development credit unions that exist in Minnesota are on reservations, as they should be. Those should be community development credit unions, but when we look at the disparities across our state, there should be a lot more mission-based credit unions established and sustained and supported by the broader community, so that we can start reversing these disparities.
And are you getting phone calls from people or emails from people saying, well, what is this idea and can we do this?
Yes. There are a lot of people all across the country who want to replicate this model, and a lot of them have a difficult time getting started because in our case, we are very lucky to have a local family foundation, the Jan Rose Phillips Family Foundation of Minnesota, to sponsor kind of our startup. And so because of that grant, I was able to come on board full time to work on our application, to garner support, to get pledges from community members. However, normal groups of activists and concerned community members wouldn't be able to have the capacity to get together after work or before work on weekends to lift this kind of project. So it's really important that we as a community and that the broader philanthropy and corporate, you know, entities support these types of projects.
My guests today are Malia Connolly, who is director of the Association for Black Economic Power in Minneapolis. And on the phone is Mike Schenck. He's vice president for research and policy analysis at the Credit Union National Association. And what I'd like to do right now is go to the phones, and I believe Juan, I hope I pronounced your name correctly, from Minneapolis?
Yeah, that's correct.
And what is your question?
I wanted to know first really quick, when is the credit union slate to open in North Minneapolis? I'm a proud native of Minnesota and would really like to get a chance to work with the credit union in entrepreneurship.
Okay.
And my second quick question really quick is, what are your plans on helping entrepreneurs, you know, advance some of their goals and dreams and stuff to get startup loans? Because it's, again, the disparities has been very, very hard for people of color to get any financial assistance and financial aid, especially in Minnesota. I mean, it just doesn't trickle down.
And are you an entrepreneur?
And I'm an entrepreneur, absolutely. I run a small media business. Media One is the name of my small business.
And you've had trouble getting loans, just normal working capital or to expand your business?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's take the first – we'll take this, this. These are great questions, so Thank you so much for calling. But first, the first question is – when are you set to be open?
Great. Thanks for that, Juan. So a typical credit union startup takes about 3 to 7 years. Our goal was to be open early 2019.
And let's see, when did you have the idea?
2016, but we didn't start working on this application until February of 2017, so about a year.
So you're on the fast track.
We are on a very fast track. So okay. we're trying to do it in 18 months. So we'll be submitting our application this summer. We'll probably have to volley back and forth with regulators, but we're on track to meet our goal to be open the second quarter of 2019. So we'll be celebrating with you. Hopefully you've pledged and you'll be there at opening day.
Now let's go to the second part of this question, which is entrepreneurs feeding into disparities, difficulty of getting loans.
Yeah, this is definitely a challenge and something that a lot of pledge members have lifted. Our philosophy is really that our job is to be in the gap where community members aren't receiving loans and are having difficulty with even community organizations being able to receive loans. A lot of these are startup loans, like Juan mentioned, unsecured. And it's really important for us to be really innovative in our approach to new businesses and working capital loans. And so that's what we intend to do. As long as we're able to raise the deposits, that's why pledging is so important, and additional capital from partners and sponsors, we want to be able to circulate funds to encourage small businesses. Another element is our philosophy around lending in the application process. Typically, when you approach a financial institution, you get one of two answers. It's either approval or denial. And we really want to change.
I'm used to both.
Me too. We really want to change that culture. And so we want to create an application process that takes you through eligibility, make sure that we're not burdening you with debt. So we want to really look closely, not necessarily at your credit score, but at your income to debt ratio. We want to make sure that we're not putting you in a worse position than you already are. And then when we get to the approval and the decision, it's not approval or denial. It's either you get approved or you get a plan. And so there's a sustainability in relationship with Village Trust that we want to maintain connection with entrepreneurs and with individuals who are looking for loans, whether it's a small dollar loan or whether it's a small startup loan. We want to make sure that the answer, if it isn't approval, then it's actually a roadmap on how we can get you there. And that could include partnering up with other organizations that have solutions that already work. We're not into reinventing the wheel. So there are a lot of really great organizations that have really great programs to help entrepreneurs that can also be just individual coaching and helping business owners understand their business plans or build their business plans and be more strategic in their approach in getting capital. And so I really hope we can partner with entrepreneurs like Juan and they can have a different experience so that even if we're not able to get to the yes at the first try, at least they know that we're committed to them as members of the credit union, as members of the community, and as vibrant leaders and entrepreneurs in Hennepin and Ramsey County.
So, Mike, how common is this? I mean, in my experience, as I was just jokingly quipped, I mean, it's a yes or a no. But how common is this yes or let's develop a plan?
At credit unions, it's very common. So financial education, financial counseling, literacy workshops, and that sort of thing, we like to say that's not a thing we do. That's the thing that we do. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think really sets credit unions and financial cooperatives apart from the for-profit banking world is that we do tend to be local and small, and because of that, we have a lot more flexibility in our underwriting in the first place, and a greater focus on just sitting down with people and listening to their stories and making exceptions. The underwriting criteria is not being determined in some corporate headquarters on one of the coasts. It's local. The typical credit union, the median-sized credit union, so if you take them all, rank them from high to low in terms of overall assets, take the middle value. The typical credit union has $30 million in total assets and is 40% of credit unions overall are operated by five or fewer full-time equivalent employees. In contrast, if you look in the banking sector, the typical bank has $200 million in total assets, so substantially larger than credit unions. So that size and the fact that there are few employees, generally speaking, really does give those institutions a lot more flexibility than they otherwise would have, a greater likelihood that they would not only be willing but able to sit down with people and, as I say, listen to those stories.
And I know we're largely concentrating on Village Trust, but I would also like to broaden out this conversation to rural Minnesota, to any place where you feel you're in a financial desert, where there aren't the kind of community-based financial institutions that are willing to lend to homeowners or to local businesses. So do you think that this type of community-led credit union can help small rural towns grow? So give us a call at 651-227-6000, toll-free at 800-242-2828, and online you can tweet at CFarrellEcon. And so moving out of the Twin Cities, we're going to go to Coon Rapids, and Joe is on the line.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. So I have two questions. The first one is I'm an Asian American, and I own a small business, I own a home, and I do own a condo. I've never had any problem getting loans, so my first question is, are you aware of any Asian American owned co-ops and banks like that? The second question is my ignorance. So why is it and how that African Americans are having this difficulty getting loans, and how can the people even discriminate based on the race?
Okay. So I'm going to go, Mike, we'll go to you in terms of, and Malaya, please feel free to offer on the, so in terms of Asian-led credit unions?
I'm not aware of any in Minnesota, but I do know that they exist. There are a handful of them that I'm specifically aware of, but I'd have to do a little more digging to find out, you know, where they are and how large they are. I mean, I do think this issue with difficulty in getting loans and so forth, it is especially obvious in communities of color and in low-income areas. But it is also an issue that I think is generally obvious no matter where you look. The Federal Reserve does a study of the economic well-being of consumers, and in their most recent study, you may have heard, half of Americans say that they can't come up with $400 for an emergency expense.
Right.
So access to credit is a really big deal. A substantial number of average Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, no matter where you live. And so this issue of access is critically important, and again, just about everywhere you look.
Emily, in terms of, you know, what Joe was saying.
First, I'd like to let you know, Joe, Asian Economic Development Association, AIDA, is an organization that's really committed to bolstering and supporting Asian American business owners, entrepreneurs. I believe they're based in St. Paul. You should look them up. I don't know of any Asian credit unions or financial cooperatives. I'm sure that if there are kind of a group of them, there might be a national association. But AIDA is a great place to start. As far as looking at the disparities, I think what Mike is saying is true. We have an issue that's more of a class issue in general, but especially when we talk about Minnesota, we really can't ignore the abject disparities between whites and blacks.
Yeah.
And so when we look at the common denominator of just general skin color, and not just black folks, you know, are the worst disparities, but also Latina and Native folks, you know, who are in these gaps, we can't ignore the fact that these are individual cultural and structural examples of implicit bias. I mean, they're on every single level.
It's not necessarily implicit. It's fairly explicit.
That's a better word, explicit bias. And that gives way to, you know, a system of institutional racism. And that's something that people don't like to say. We like to dance around that, especially in Minnesota. We don't want to get really, you know, raw with language around what we're facing. But I think it's important for us to do that because there is a fatigue in the Black community of trying to address, you know, traditional institutions to give them a chance to let them in. This is the reason why communities of color are organizing their own financial institutions because, you know, it's very, very exhaustive. These are decades of statistics that have come out of trying to get banks and trying to get financial institutions to change their policies, to address their cultures, to deal with, you know, explicit bias and to deal with institutional racism. But we're not seeing the passion. We're not seeing the deep commitment. We're not seeing the bold action that we need to. And so I think we can talk until we're blue in the face about disparities. I think communities of color and the Black community in general are more impassioned to start building systems that are led by them and systems that are owned by them and systems that are there to serve them.
Okay. So let's go to Shantae in Minneapolis. Is that Shantae?
You said it right.
Ah, so what is your question?
My question is, and I like to say, you know, this is awesome. I learned about the opening or the, you know, the thing about this credit union a while ago, and I was super geeked, excited. I want to jump on board, been on the site, everything. Malia, awesome. You know, I think this is beautiful. Haven't seen you in a while. We went to church years ago together. So when I heard your name and saw that you were involved in this, I just thought it was wonderful.
Oh, wonderful.
My question is, okay, so Black-owned, right? And which, I'm a supporter of Black-owned businesses. You know, I'm an African-American woman. I believe that it's very, something that is very important within our community to have our dollars circling within our communities. But being that it's Black-owned, it's like, okay, come to the Black, you know, we're helping all the Black people, you know what I mean? I know that it's going to be diverse, but it's just kind of like, you know, what is the difference between the traditional bank where it's like not, you know, Black-owned, you know what I mean, versus going to this black-owned bank, and it's like, okay, I feel more comfortable coming here because it's black-owned. Maybe they'll help me more because I am black and they're black and they understand me versus going to an institution where it's not black-owned and they don't because it's a credit union.
Right.
And then next I like to say I belong to credit unions. I worked in credit unions. I worked in the banking, in a bank. I didn't like the bank. And I knew the difference when I started working for a credit union and understood credit unions. Then I became, you know, pro-credit unions, and I will never bank at a bank again. Mm. Banks make it super hard just to even get a credit card, even with secured. I had a horrible experience with Wells Fargo. Like, bye, you know. Credit unions, just recently, I am an entrepreneur, tried to get a startup loan. It is so hard. I'm still looking. I'm still trying. It's very difficult. So it's like, you know, with a credit union, I was turned down too. And normally they're more, you know, work with you, like someone talked about earlier. We work with you. We sit down with you. We see where you are. It's a case by case. So I did not experience that with this credit union. And I was really
surprised.
Okay.
So what is going to be her experience when she goes to Village Trust?
Well, first, Shante, thank you so much for calling in. I'm so, so happy that you asked this question about the language around being black owned. And I'm glad that you asked that question because there's a lot of confusion. And I'm sure that, you know, you understanding credit unions, that's a little bit of a contradiction of it being black owned. And the language that we've used that has been a little bit confused because people don't understand credit unions is that we're black led. And the reason why we want to commit to our board and our board being over 51% or at least 51% black and to have a black staff is because we're a mission based credit union. Our mission is to uphold and infuse the capital that the black community needs to reverse the disparities that exist. The importance of that is that this is a community owned credit union. We want everyone to be members. We want, you know, even Joe in Coon Rapids to pledge his membership and join. The idea is that if we all pool our resources together, we can offer, you know, equitable, accessible financial products to all community members, but we want to focus the benefits toward those communities that have been most disparaged, including black folks on the north side and the black community throughout the Twin Cities. So I hope that clears that up. We don't want to create a silo. We can't do this alone. We need the entire Twin Cities, Hennepin, Ramsey County communities to come together to say, we're committed to reversing these, you know, atrocious disparities. We're committed. This is an opportunity for an everyday person to take action around our disparities. And we don't have to wait for corporations to do it or banks to do it. We can do it together as a community. And I'm proud to say that the pledge membership that we do have is very diverse, and we have folks who are from very different ethnic backgrounds who are supporting this effort and are uplifting black leadership, understanding that we need to have leaders making decisions if we're going to have a mission based around a certain community. And when we talk about experiences of getting the startup loan, similar to what I think Juan was talking about, we want to be committed. And so I would encourage you to come down to our office even now so we can talk to some of our partners and see where we can get you help. We're at 227 Colfax Avenue North. It's on the north side on the corner of Colfax and Glenwood, Suite 230. And you can also reach out to me. Email me at Melea, M-E-L-E-A, at abepmn.org. And let's talk about how we can get you the startup loan that you need. And sometimes it's not credit union. Sometimes it's community development financial institutions like MEDA, like NEON. There are a lot of Black-led and Black-focused organizations in the Twin Cities that are passionate about helping entrepreneurs get on their feet and get their start. So let's get it figured out. We don't have to wait for the credit union to open to help you get that loan.
And, Mike, we got a question from online question from Carlos in Minneapolis. And you might have some insight into this. He says, I just got my residency card and Social Security number, but it's so hard for me to build up my credit. Can a credit union help with that?
Absolutely. As I say, credit unions are sort of uniquely positioned to serve in a consultative capacity and to put people into starter loans, in some cases payday alternative loans, whatever seems to be appropriate, that are consumer friendly. And I always recommend that consumers who are in the market for any sort of financial product or service at least include one credit union in their shopping plans. They will not regret doing that. Invariably, they will find that the deals are better. The rates that you would pay on any type of loan will be substantially lower than at banks generally, and the yields on any deposits that you put into credit unions, generally speaking, will be higher than what you'll see in the for-profit sector. Again, the key is no outside stockholders, and therefore profits that are made go right back to the members. So,
and the key for the individual is just take out a little loan, pay it off, take out a little loan, pay it off, and before you know it, you have that credit history.
Right. You know, there are a lot of different products and services that that can be used to do that. One, for example, would be a secured credit card. You could use a savings secured credit card and with a very small security interest to demonstrate that you have, you know, good credit behaviors, and you know, start small and then work your way up. That's the way to go.
So let's go and let's talk to Phil in Minneapolis. Phil?
Hey, good. How are you guys today?
Well,
I just want to make a 2 points. One of the things that, and I'm a member of a credit union, but that's not my primary banking. And I'm a member of a credit union because my wife's a school teacher.
Okay.
But the issue that I found as an African American is that we have to teach our community financial literacy. And, you know, my dad always told me a long time ago, if you think a college education is expensive, there's nothing more expensive that adversely impacts your life more than ignorance, socially and economically. And one example I did is that people would tell me to go into the stock market. You know, I've done well, but I inherited over 700 acres of farmland. What I did, I went to agriculture, and I turned it into a pine timber plantation. That's doing research. That would do better than what any stock market would do over the next 15, 20 years.
Right. So
it's about, you know, financial literacy. Just because you can afford something, that doesn't mean that you need it. Understanding markets and establishing a good credit, everything is, that's the foundation. You can make all the money in the world. You can make $500,000 a year, but if you're not financially literate, you're going to go broke.
And I think you're not going to disagree with this one.
No, thank you so much, Phil. This is so true. And this really drills down on 2 points. Having a community development credit union and community development financial institution, that financial literacy element is key to this mission, and making sure that we're educating folks, that we're meeting them where they're at, and that we're also educating Black people about consumerism and the power of our consumerism. There's a lot of behaviors that we've learned as a culture that we've become a feeding ground for corporations and for consumerism and as a whole. And so, you know, highlighting elements like minimalism and highlighting elements like, you know, practices of pausing before you purchase and not making impulse buys.
Yeah.
Those are all
developing
things that
good habits.
Exactly, that can be included, you know, in the process of that approve or a plan. Also, I want to lift up the fact that education, training, and information is included in cooperative principles. And this is another reason why we uplift the word cooperative and it's included in our name. It's a principle that we have to adhere to in order to be a cooperative. And the other principles are open and voluntary membership, democratic member control, members' economic participation, autonomy and independence. Again, education, training, and information, cooperation among cooperatives, and concern for community. So those are all things that we need to adhere to as a financial cooperative. And I'm glad that you lifted that, because that's something that we'll be passionate about, and we'll be looking for community input around how we design those things in a way that are approachable and accessible to community.
So let's stay in Minneapolis, and we're going to go to Abdurrahman.
Yes.
What is your question?
Thank you. This is a great essential service that the community needs. My question is, there's a large African community in Hennepin, in the Twin Cities, and in Minnesota. There's also, they don't know how to navigate the financial system, but it's also a challenge because I'm happen to be a Somali, but also Muslim, and because of my religion, interest rates, there's a lot of challenge that my community faces, mortgage and housing. But also we send a lot of money back home, remittance, and the mainstream financial institutions, we're struggling to access them. So are you planning to do any work with the African community and the Muslim community in Hennepin and in Minnesota.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like both of you to take on this question, yes. But we'll start with you, Malia.
Yeah, the challenges for folks who are you know, within Islam and are Muslim are definitely serious, especially when we talk about remittance and sending support home.
Because you can't charge interest.
Exactly. And so the issue of interest is really important. We actually have been meeting with a community group that has been also interested in establishing a credit union specifically for the needs of the African community here. And so we believe that the more the merrier, and as many financial cooperatives, especially those that are mission-based, is good for everyone. So we've been kind of giving them feedback around our experience, and I think they're moving forward. And if they decide to combine their efforts with ours, we'll also be taking on those interests. And if they're able to develop products that work for them, we want to make sure to replicate those and make them available to community if they need a farther reach. This is another example of cooperation among cooperatives, and it's also an example of us making sure that the leadership that's at the helm is actually within the identity of the folks that they're wanting to focus on. So I'm not a Muslim woman, right? I'm African American. I'm Black, and so I don't have the same realities and lived experiences as folks that you're talking about. And it's really important that if you have a mission based, you know, organization, entity, financial cooperative, that you have folks in leadership who understand what the needs are and know how to develop the solutions. So either we're going to follow the lead of this community group that's trying to establish this you know, Muslim financial cooperative, or we're going to encourage them to give us the leadership to show us how it should be done. Either way, time will tell how that develops out. And I wish I had the name of their emerging credit union, but I don't. I don't think they had a name yet. But I just want you to be encouraged that there are leaders in the community in Hennepin and Ramsey County that are thinking about this idea and looking for solutions, and we're at the table.
And Mike, about credit unions and the Muslim community.
Yeah, so I was just going to mention that, like Malia, I think this is a perfect example of cooperation amongst cooperatives. The example of remittances, I think, is one that stands out in this sector, where smaller institutions, in some cases, may not have the resources to do it, and they partner with larger institutions to do that. So. Whether or not you have access to an institution that's specifically, oriented toward Muslims or any particular group, there are opportunities within the credit union sector to access products and services that would be appropriate for you through the cooperative network. And again, it largely comes down to taking the time to shop around.
So now, Malia, you're doing a soft launch, I believe.
Yes.
Do I have the expression right?
So yes.
It's a soft launch. What is a soft launch?
The soft launch is really, what can we do right now without our charter to assist and address some of the most urgent needs in the community? And one of those are payday lending. And so 21%
I guess, give us a brief definition of payday lending.
Sure. So payday lending is a small dollar consumer loan that you can go to places like the Unbank or Payday America to take out.
With a high interest rate.
Very high interest rate. The average payday loan is 300% interest. And most folks just need around $300 to $400. That's all they're looking for. And these usually are loans that happen, like we talked about earlier, when there's a crisis that arises and someone needs an extra $300 or $400 and they don't have it because they're living paycheck to paycheck. Usually banks don't offer these types of products because they're very costly. Any loan is very costly to underwrite. And so because of the size of the loan, they're not profitable enough. And so payday lenders have found this market and decided to, you know, hike up the interest rates in order to provide it at a larger volume. The problem is that payday loans have to be paid in full. And so when people come to that point, and obviously they were in crisis and then they don't have it, they have to take out another payday loan. And so you end up in this payday loan cycle, and they call it a payday lending trap, that folks end up paying 300%, but almost, you know, triple that once before they're able to actually escape that loan.
Right.
So we're trying to develop a small dollar loan that we can offer to pledge members on the north side. And that's what we mean by soft launch. We really want to tailor the offering and start slow. But the idea is that it's a new day loan. It's a low percentage rate, reasonable.
What percentage rate are you thinking
8%.
Of? 8%. 8%. Okay.
It's reasonable terms and flexible terms. And also there's a lower entry point. So we're not necessarily looking at your credit score, but we are going to look at your income to debt ratio to make sure that you have the ability to take the debt on. So it's really important for us to start developing some products and tools for folks that they need right now. And so that soft launch is happening this summer. As to see if we're, how we do with a beta group, we'll expand it and let everyone know and do a much larger launch. But this is going to be a product that we hope will be a flagship of our community development credit union.
And Mike, how common is a soft launch? Is this something that you're used to, or is this something different?
Well, as I said earlier, we don't really see a lot of newly chartered credit unions on an annual basis, at least recently. And so there's not a lot of experience, but I would say that, you know, generally speaking, the people that start credit unions are interested in helping people, and it wouldn't surprise me if you look back through time that the folks that are engaged in these efforts would be doing this sort of thing. You know, credit unions are about people helping people, and doesn't necessarily take a charter to do that. So. I think what's happening up in Minneapolis is just really terrific, and more people ought to know about it.
So in the very brief time left to us, how do people learn more about it?
Please go to abepm.org, ABEPMN.org, and pledge your membership for Village Trust Financial Cooperative.
Well, thank you very much. Malia Connolly is director of the Association for Black Economic Power in Minneapolis. Mike Schenck is Vice President for Research and Policy Analysis at the Credit Union National Association. I'm Chris Farrell for Minnesota Public Radio.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828. Or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.